Man, don't baptisms kick butt? I mean, man, there is nothing like it, man. Hey, and Oak Creek Franklin as well. I know you're doing them just across the board. We're so excited, and thank you for allowing us to be a part of people's faith steps. It's why we do what we do. And like I said, there is nothing like it. Well, today we are continuing in our series, Relationships on Purpose, where over the past couple weeks, we have been talking through this idea. Here's what most of us believe about relationships, that great relationships happen by accident. Now, no one would say that, okay? But we do say it by what we do or don't do. And so over the last few weeks, we have been talking about that many of our relationships, frustrations and struggles and even fallouts are preventable if we would just approach them with a little bit more purpose. And so that's what this series is all about. Now, today what we're gonna do, we're just gonna jump right in and talk about the most difficult relationship of them all, parenting. Now, if you are a parent, show of hands, how many of you would say that parenting is very challenging? Yes. Oak Creek Franklin, yeah, some of you are like, if I had four hands, I would be putting them in the air right now. Yeah, I've never talked to an engaged parent that said, it's easy. It's a cakewalk. There is nothing to it. Have 10 kids. It's nothing to it, you know? And I know what some of you students are thinking. You're thinking, well, it wouldn't be that difficult if you just let me do what I wanted to do, you know? It'd be really easy. I can remember when I first became a father, and there was just this feeling of love and being overwhelmed all at the same time. I mean, I'd never experienced something like that before. And I was like, okay, here it is. I'm responsible for another human being. It was cool and crazy all at the same time. And what I've realized is that feeling never goes away. And if you're a parent, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, parenting, it's personal. It's painful, it's difficult. It's just kind of this crazy feeling. It's always feeling like you're failing, yet it is one of our highest callings. And it can yield some of the greatest rewards in our life. It was actually this relationship, the parenting relationship, that drove most of the idea for the series. Because I've had a lot of conversations with both existing and expecting parents about parenting. And I'll often ask them, okay, so what's your plan moving forward? And I can tell by the answers that it really isn't something that's thought out too much. And so what I want to do is I want to have the conversation with you that I often have with other people, but in much more detail. And I just want to say a couple things up front by addressing just a few groups of people. You might be here and you go, well, I don't have kids. That's true, but the reality is that you influence the next generation in some way. And you may not have kids, but you may know someone who has kids, and maybe they're just, you know, they're dealing with the struggles of parenting, or you may have kids in the future. And so maybe you're listening for your future as far as that's concerned. You might be a student, and you're gonna kind of look at this and you're gonna go, hey, this is gonna be fun. I can evaluate how my parents are doing or not doing based on what they say here. This is great. Now, here's the thing. We're not doing it for your evaluation, but you do need to know we are doing it because, and talking about this, because you matter that much to us. Plus, here's what I want you to do for me. I want you to hang with me because at the end, I'm gonna talk about something that relates to you that you probably don't even know is going on right now. So I want you to hang with me. And then the last group is I wanna talk to parents for a minute. It is very common with parenting because of the challenge of it that we approach this topic very defensively speaking. But here's what I want you to do for me. I want you to approach this topic with great humility. And the reason why we get defensive is because it's such a personal thing. It's kind of like, don't you tell me how to raise my kids, so to speak. But here's the thing. The best thing you can do for both you and your kids is to lay those defenses down and admit that you don't have it figured out. None of us do. We all need help as parents. None of us is perfect, starting with the one on stage talking right now. And I want to encourage you just to be open to what God has to say to you about how you can be more purposeful in your parenting. I was talking to Donna as I was preparing this talk, and I said, you know, honey, how you feel like a failure as a parent all the time? Then you do a talk like this, and that feeling only gets worse. I was really surprised at that as I was putting this together, but it's true. Now, to begin with, it's important for us to face reality. And here's reality. Mental health is having a huge impact on this generation. In fact, at an alarming rate. Starting at age 7, and it's now even starting to get a little bit younger than that, starting at age 7, kids are dealing with high experiences of anxiety. They're battling depression, among other things. And then we as parents, we are facing this constant pressure that before our kids, as our kids enter elementary school, we are feeling this pressure to do something that they are not emotionally ready for us to do. And that is to give them one of these babies right here. And we go, here you go, have fun. And as a result, we are launching them into the world of Snapchat and TikTok and porn and gender confusion. And not only are they not ready emotionally to handle it, their brains aren't developed enough for them to handle it. Before I was 10, I watched the movie Jaws. And if you don't know anything about Jaws or have heard of Jaws, it's a very deep movie. It is about a shark that just runs around eating people. And I can remember watching Jaws, and the thing that I wasn't the most afraid of was the shark eating people, but it was the music that was played before he would eat people. And if you remember, oh, I mean, that freaked me out so much after I got done watching the movie. I didn't go into the water for weeks afterwards. And here's the thing, I lived in Oshkosh, okay? It wasn't like those were dangerous waters that I was going into. Never was a shark in Lake Winnebago, as far as that's concerned. But man, if I wasn't ready emotionally to watch a movie like Jaws, then our kids aren't ready emotionally to just be open to just unlimited information for them. You see, the results are coming in, and the results are not good for our teenagers. The results are they're suicidal, they're depressed, they're confused about who they are, they're cutting themselves, and the list just goes on and on. And the reality is that it is harder to be a teenager today than it ever has been before. And here's the other reality that we need to face. Parents, what we are doing is not working. You see, all that stuff I talked about with teenagers they're experiencing, it is all on the rise right now. And so with God's help and a lot of intentionality, so we don't have to settle for that. And we shouldn't settle for that because this is the next generation as far as that's concerned. But we have to be willing to parent very differently. Now, let me ask you this question. What do you think is the most important thing that you can do as a parent? Now, you might think, well, spend more time with my kids, love them unconditionally, be consistent with discipline and boundaries and all that stuff. It might be, well, to help them follow Jesus. And you know what? All those things are really important, but they are not the most important thing that you can do as a parent. The most important thing that you can do as a parent is probably something that you've never even considered doing before. The most important thing that you can do as a parent is create a God-centered goal statement as a parent. And I say God-centered because God has a goal for us as parents. And our kids are a gift from him. Don and I have three kids, and here's the thing, they aren't necessarily my kids. They're his kids that he's entrusted to us to raise, and as a result, we'll be held accountable someday for how we raise them. And I say goal statement. Goal statement, if you want to have more purpose in your parenting, then you need to clearly understand the purpose for parenting. Now here's the thing, you might hear this, and you might go, you know, I don't want to do a goal statement, but here's the thing. You already have a goal statement, whether you've crafted one or not. And it reveals itself in what you do or don't do as a parent. Your goal statement may be things like this. Well, I just want my kids to be happy. Well, I just want them to get into a certain school. I want them to someday to have a family. I want them to be my friend someday. Or it might be, I want them to be the next Caitlin Clark or Dame or Giannis, which if that's your goal, would you hurry it up? Because they need them today as far as that's concerned, all right? You know, you already have a goal statement for your kids, whether you realize it or not. Before Don and I had kids, we were encouraged to do this. And we had never even thought about it before. And I kind of bristled at the idea. I'm like, well, I'm gonna do something like that, you know? But Donald's like, no, let's just do it anyways. And so we took some time and we crafted our own goal statement. And I tell you what, it was the by far the best thing that we did as parents. I mean, it became the filter for what we did and still continue to do to this day, because it starts with the end in mind. And so everything that we did was, does it get it to that direction? Does it move us in that direction? Here's our goal statement. Our goal statement is this. We want to raise our kids to follow Jesus and then equip them to live on their own. And so here's what I want to do with the rest of my time. I want to break down that first goal statement, first part of it, and get very practical with you. And then, because here's the thing, a goal should drive a really practical response. And here's what my hope is. My hope is that you don't have to copy our goal statement, okay? You may create one on your own, but my hope is that no matter where, how young or old your kids are, you can do this whole thing. Even if your kids are out of the house, you can craft a goal statement with your kids being out of the house. But I'm hoping that you'll grab this whole idea and you either copy our goal statement or create one on your own. And then the second part of it, I'll drop on our Ridge podcast later this week. In fact, if you're not subscribed to our podcast, want to encourage you to do that. And I'll talk about what does it mean to equip our kids to live on their own. We raise our kids to follow Jesus. If we truly believe that our kids are a gift from God, then our number one priority is to teach them the bigger picture of life. And that is that there is a God who loves them way more than we do, and that he sent his son to die for them, and that it's in him they find their identity and their self-worth, and that he's created them on purpose for a purpose. In other words, as parents, we are the spiritual leaders in our families. As parents, you have been given, and I have been given, divine authority in our families. It's something that has been given to us by God. And so the question then is, well, how do I lead my family spiritually? How do we lead our family spiritually? Well, here's what I want to do. I want to give you three ways to do that. And where these are found is in what I call a go-to passage in the Bible on parenting. And so whether you're a Bible person or not, I think you'll get a lot out of this passage. It's actually found in the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy. And most scholars believe our guy Moses wrote this passage. And here's what's really significant about this. Moses reminds us that God has placed in our hands the power to change not just a generation, but generations with what we do with our kids. Here's what Moses writes. He says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." Now, this was actually a prayer called the Shema. A Jewish person prayed this three times a day, morning, afternoon, and evening. And then Moses writes, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts." And I want you to notice something. Before he talks at all about our kids, he uses the word "your" throughout. In other words, he starts with us. How do we lead our families spiritually? Moses said, the first thing we need to do is we need to make your faith a priority. Now, I have been known in our family to have a lead foot. I've got 7 speeding tickets and have been pulled over way more times than that. But because of my sweet personality, have been able to get off for some reason. And I've never seen a speed limit sign that I have agreed with. And since my kids, since they got to that age where they are able to make the connection between speed limit in car and speed limit in sign, ever since they were to make that connection, it was very common us to be driving in the car. And they'd be like, "Dad, you're speeding." Because they're rule followers, you know? And so they're always wanting to make sure it's like, Dad, you're speeding. And here's what I often say to them when they were young. I'd be like, "Oh, that's an old speed limit sign. They haven't updated that one yet." So when I was teaching the boys how to drive, I would say, "Hey, you're speeding." And what do you think they would say to me? "You always did, Dad. You always do." Now, what was I going to say to them? "Oh, you do what I say, not what I do." Now, you ever have someone say that to you before? I mean, what are you thinking after they say that? If you don't, why should I? And you know what? The same is true with God. Our kids, they will do what we do, not what we say. Or I heard one person say it this way. They said, "Our faith is better caught than taught." One of the things I love about this generation is they hate fake. They despise hypocrisy. So if we're not taking steps and we're not taking steps to pursue a relationship with God, guess what? Most likely, they won't be either. And you don't have to be perfect. You may be new in your faith and just taking steps and all that stuff, but the steps must be personal, must be authentic, and it must be growing. Here's why this is so important that our kids see us taking steps in our faith. There was a study done years ago, and this study talked about the connection between parents taking steps and then kids as they leave their household that will continue to take steps in their faith. Here's some of the results of that study. It says if mom and dad went to church consistently, which is consistently is twice a month average, Here's what they found. 72% of kids will follow Jesus as adults. 72%. If only mom went to church, it dropped all the way down to 15%. Now dads, I don't know why this is, okay? I don't know why this is. Doesn't mean you're more important or anything like that, okay? But dads, here's how important you are in the spiritual direction of your family. If only dad goes, that number goes up to 55%. And then if neither mom nor dad, the number drops down to 6%. And so there's this direct connection between mom or dad, and how their kids, were the direction of their kids, where they'll go spiritually speaking as they leave the household. Now, here's a couple things that Don and I did, just practically speaking, to model our faith to them. And here's the thing, as I give you examples, I'm not giving you examples as an expert. I mean, we made tons of mistakes, okay? And so I can only get to show you the highlights that worked. I don't have time to show you all the bad stuff. But now some of you might think, well, Mark, that's easy for you. You're a pastor. Yep, you know what that means? It was harder for us. Because for our kids, it was an expectation. There was a pressure on them because of what I do. Okay, here's a couple things that we did. We modeled for them what it's like to walk with God outside of the building setting, so to speak. And so it was oftentimes kids would walk downstairs in the morning at breakfast, and they would see dad on the couch reading the Bible and mom reading her YouVersion Bible devotion. Don and I, we have been a part of a Ridge group since we can remember. And so when we were kids, man, we took them with us to group, whether they wanted to go or not. And then when they were old enough, we continued to be in a group. Why? Because we wanted to model for them. We need other people to grow in our faith. We modeled generosity for them. It was a big thing for us. So when our kids were entering elementary school, we taught them how to handle their finances God's way. Give, save, live. Give, save, live. First part goes to God and all that stuff. And then there would be times like for Live Big and Christmas, we would sit down and we'd say, okay, dudes, you're getting less this year because we're going to give more away to help those in need, because God has called us to be generous. Listen, we can't give away what we don't have. I'll often hear parents say, well, you know, my kids are in high school and they're not interested, or they're going away and they're kind of questioning faith and walking away from faith. In my opinion, I think a big reason why that happens is because faith is not a priority for us. And so when it comes time for them to begin to wrestle through what their priorities are, if it wasn't a priority for us, they're gonna do what we do, not what we say. So it starts with us parents. And the cool thing is, as we take steps with God, it has a ripple effect to our kids and our grandkids. Second thing we need to do is we need to make spiritual environments important. Once again, from our guy Moses, he says, these commandments that I give you today, tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. You know, it's one thing for us to model faith as a priority for us, but Moses is saying eventually that transition needs to happen where now we begin to be very intentional about making it a priority for them. There's a law that sociologists have that's called the law of exposure. Here's what the law of exposure says. The more you're around something, the more you become like it. And here's what this means as parents. Who or what we expose our kids to will go a long way in shaping what they believe and who they become. Now, we can't force our kids to follow Jesus, nor would we want to, but we can be very intentional about where we place them and who we place them with that increases the likelihood that they will. Once again, a couple things that Don and I did just that worked well, and I think this is honestly the area that we struggled with the most because there's so much coming at you here. Some of the things that worked for us. As right away, we stuck our kids into Ridge Kids. And the reason why that is because I grew up going to church and kind of the service like this, and I couldn't stand it because it wasn't connected to me. So church was very boring for me. And so what's cool about Ridge Kids, it's at their level, and they can learn about Jesus and in a fun way. And so our kids always thought, hey, it's fun going to church. And then when they were in middle school, we put them in Ridge Students and Ridge Middle School because they're wrestling with certain things that we're not wrestling with as parents. And so Ridge Middle School allows them to do that in an age appropriate way. And then in high school, it was challenging for our kids because of what I do. The boys came to me and they said, we don't feel comfortable in Ridge High School because we're afraid that if we talk and be open, that they're going to tell you everything. Not they're going to tell me nothing, okay? But they were afraid of that. So I worked it out with a network pastor. And I said, can our kids go to your Ridge High School student? They're like, yeah. And so they ended up going there. Now, our kids, here's what they also did. At a very young age, we mobilized and equipped our kids to serve. Josh and Caleb served on the online team. Josh now serves on the worship band. Ellie still serves at Ridge Kids. And I tell you, I love to see the critical generation serving around here. The moment your kids start serving is the moment that the church becomes their church. Now, some of you parents are thinking, yeah, but if they serve here, then I'll have to be here more often. That's the point. Once again, I'll hear parents say this. Well, I'm just going to let my kids make a decision on their own. I'm just going to leave it up to them, and they would rather go here than go here. I love what Edward, Duke of Windsor, said about America. He said, the thing that impresses me most about America is the way parents obey their children. Are you leading your family, or is your kids leading you? Listen, it's normal for teenagers. It's normal for them to kind of bristle and not want to go and all that stuff. That is very normal. But here's what you say. You say, this isn't what we do. This is who we are. And so you make it fun. You have conversation with them. You reward them afterwards. Maybe you do something fun afterwards, but you keep rewarding that whole idea. Now, a big challenge today, I think the biggest challenge today, is activities and sports. They are 7 days a week. They're all the time and all that stuff. And I think the pressure is not necessarily on the kids. The pressure is on the parents. And the pressure is, this is what everybody else is doing, and we have to do it. And, you know, we have to feel like we have to fit in. Or it's like, if we don't do it, our kids will be left behind. Let me just say something about that statement. That is not true. They will not be left behind. It is not a true statement. But here's what Donna and I did. And you know what? This was really hard to do. I'm just going to be upfront with you because of the pull and the pressure of this whole idea. We set boundaries. And our boundaries were, we will only be gone X number of weekends and Sundays away at the expense of activities. Now, some of you are going, but I pay a lot for those, and it's going to hurt their spot on the team. Do you know what will hurt worse? By choosing activities over growing in their faith, you are sending a very clear message to your kids what they should value. And it's not God. And they will carry that with them into adulthood. Plus, our kids need to see us as parents making countercultural decisions that are hard. Not only are we modeling for them what we value, but we are modeling for them what leadership is. And leadership doesn't make decisions based on what everybody else does. What leaders do is they make decisions based on what's right and wise long-term. Final thing, we need to make the home a teachable place. Last quote from our dude, Moses. He says, impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you get up, when you drive to soccer, when you have a meal, when you sit down before you go to bed, when you're walking to the park. Here's the bottom line. What happens at home is more important than what happens at church. Now, they both work together. Okay, but the reality is that we will probably only have your kids about 40 hours a year, and at home, you will be around your kids about 3,000 hours a year. It's like some of you are gonna spend more time in the van this month with your kids than we will the entire year at church. Now, I know for some of you parents, the thought of having spiritual conversations with your kids, it's kind of an intimidating thing. It's like, I'm just kind of learning this whole thing myself. I don't know what to do. Here is something that Don and I did that really worked well. And it sounds easy, but it just really worked well. We had what was called bridge conversations with our kids. And it still works today as adults, okay? But here's what we did. Bridge conversations is you take a normal activity and then you bridge the conversation to God. And what it does is it creates an environment where talking about God is a very normal thing in your household. And so here are some of the things, just examples for us. Once again, they sound kind of cheesy, even now I say them kind of, but they really were effective. It would kind of work like this. One of the kids would bring home a great report card, and we'd go, man, good job. Man, God has really given you a sound mind. We would be on vacation, and either Don or me, we would have a time where we would go, man, this vacation, not a lot of people get this vacation. God has really given us this great gift, and we are so grateful that he's allowed us to have this experience together. There was this one time we were out to eat, and they messed up our order, and they just gave us a ton of extra food. And I was like, Donna, do I tell them that this is the wrong order? She's like, of course, you got to tell them, you got to model it. I'm like, that's right. And so we told them, and they was like, you know, no, take it. And I remember just looking at, I just looked at them and went, God obviously knew we needed more tonight. You know, there's some other, just some things that will seem small, but they aren't small. Pray before meals. Before you go to bed, ask simple questions. Or when you're driving in the car, just ask them simple questions about stuff, about faith, and just let them talk. It's not for you to give answers. It's, once again, it's just to let them have conversations. On the way home from church, hey, what did you learn? Here's what we learned. You know why this is important? There might be a day when your son or daughter questions things about God. And because you made talking about God a normal thing, you've created a safe environment for them to process that with you. We raise our kids to follow Jesus. We're intentional about raising our kids to follow Jesus. Here's what Pastor Craig Kruschel said. I like how he says it. He just said it this way. He said, you gradually transfer a child's dependence away from their parents until their dependence rests solely on God. Why? Because no one loves them more than God does. It is the best place for our kids to be. Now, I realize some of you come from very complicated family situations. You know, you might be from a divorce situation right now, and you're like, Mark, I want to do this, but my ex doesn't. Here's what I want to encourage you to do. You control what you can control, and you honor God, and then you just pray that God closes the gap. You know, you might be in a blended family situation, and it is challenging as all get out to blend a family. And one of the things I've noticed that makes it challenging is that there's a mindset that often creeps into a blended family, and it's like, okay, those are my kids and those are your kids. But if you're married, you are one flesh. And so there's no your and mine anymore. They're ours. And so the question you need to wrestle with is, when we have our kids, how do we do this together? And it's also not uncommon that one of the spouse or the significant other, one of them wants to do this and the other one doesn't. What do you do? Same thing, honor God, but then you pray and encourage your spouse through your actions. Now, one of the beautiful things is that the church is here to partner with you to help you develop your kids spiritually speaking. And one of the ways we do this is through equipping you with resources and online groups. We have an online group that we're launching. It is called Parenting Get It Right. Like I said, this is an online group. You scan the QR code, you will be around a bunch of other parents that are wrestling with the very same thing with kids of all different ages. What does it mean to win at home? This will help you flush out some of that. Now, just one quick thing, two quick things, and I'm done. For many of us, we hear a talk like this, and the very common thing as parents or grandparents, aunt and uncles, whoever you may be, is you think, oh man, I haven't done any of this stuff. And so you feel like a bigger failure, there's a lot of guilt and shame and all that stuff. And so the question you ask is it too late? No, it's not. Start now. And what's the starting point for you? The starting point for you is to get before God and say, God, I'm committing to you first. And then the next step is you begin to take steps in your own faith. What is the next step for you? And then you take it. And then here's the third thing I want you to do. I want you to sit down with your kids, whether younger or older. And I want you to sit down with your kids and go, we had it all wrong. The most powerful moments with our kids is not when we get it right, but when we didn't get it right and we do what Jesus called us to do and we own up and we ask for forgiveness, because in doing so, we're actually pointing them to Jesus. Now, last thing, and this is students and parents, I'm addressing you on this, but students, I want you in on this as well, because you may not even realize this right now. There is a hunger for God with this generation that I have never seen before. We are seeing powerful moves of God on high school and college campuses across this country. The Asbury Revival, which was last year, many of us heard about that. That started because a group of college students got together for chapel and they started worshiping God and confessing their sins to each other. And that went on for over a month. And it hasn't just stopped there. We are seeing breakouts in campuses like Texas A&M and Florida State University, Alabama and Auburn, just to name a few. That kids just randomly speaking that normally wouldn't go to church are gathering by the thousands in outdoor gatherings on a Friday night where everyone else is out with their friends, maybe getting smashed, doing other things. But instead of doing that, they're gathering by the thousands. And you can see videos of this stuff. And they're making decisions to follow Jesus and they're getting baptized. And the cool thing is this is just, isn't just doing something. They are fully committing their lives to follow Jesus. We are seeing in this generation, we are seeing that they are rejecting the pressures of culture to prioritize certain things. And the reason is because they're hungry for something real and transcendent. They're hungry for God. And as parents, and here's the thing, as students, you think, I'd be the only one. That is not true. That is not true. And as parents, we can either fan that flame and we can continue to see revival and renewal hit this generation, which I believe it's going to. Or we can put that flame out. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pray for us and I'm going to pray for our kids and students. And then I'm going to pray for parents, grandparents, aunt, uncles, because we all have an influence over the next generation. We all do. And so I hope you'll join me in just praying for our kids, first off. Father, this generation, you are doing something really, really sacred. And I think just as we hear all the statistics and of just mental health and suicide and confusion and just what they do, depression, in the midst of it, you're stirring something in their hearts. And I pray you would continue to do that. I pray you would do that here. And that there would just be something that happens that we can't explain, but you can explain because it's from you. That we know if healing and wholeness is gonna come to this generation, it's gonna come from a move of you. And so we pray for the students and the kids and the young adults that are here, God. This is an amazing generation, amazing generation. May we steward them well. And God, for the parents and the grandparents and aunts and uncles, what a great responsibility you've called us to. And God, we don't want to take that lightly. So where we need to go, all right, God, I've had this wrong. I'm going to start now. The cool thing is, God, you will make up for any one of our gaps. And I pray over every single parent and grandparent, aunt and uncle, I pray that your spirit would move in their heart, that they would have the courage to take steps to go, no, I'm going to model by what I do. And conversations would happen and you'd give them favor and influence with their kids and their students and their nephews and nieces and grandkids, whoever it may be. God, thank you for the high calling to steward this next generation. What a special, sacred group. Thank you, God, for it. We commit to not taking this lightly. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.